Blog Talk Radio.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
We teach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love and covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the living water. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
Shalom, shalom. Grace and peace, everyone. Hallelujah. Grace and peace. Grace and peace. I want to say, welcome to another episode of the Sounds of Living Water. Your brother Job Israel with the Commonwealth of Israel. And this Wednesday afternoon, we have this Wednesday afternoon section with our brother Rob Christensen, which is dealing with visible secrets. The name of this session is Visible Secrets and Invisible Powers. Visible secrets and invisible powers. And the precept today is power structure. You know, you got to think about the world at large and the world that you're in, the power structure that you're in. We got to take that into serious consideration. So we're going to read a verse here out of Daniel's, the 8th chapter. And the reason why we're reading out of Daniel's 8th chapter is because that's exactly where we are. We're in the end time prophecy. And you got to be careful, you know, of that world that you're in, you know, and that this thing is got to be taken very seriously. Daniel's chapter 8 and 25, and it says this. It says, and through his policies, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. And he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. And he shall also stand up against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken with thy hands. And this is something that Daniel saw in the latter days for us. He said, you know, through his policy, he'll cause craft to prosper and prosper in his hand, and shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. And you look at today's people that's in power, they magnifying themselves. They lifting themselves up now. And so let's look at this word peace, the definition of peace quickly. And it says this, peace. Oh, my dictionary folded on me. There we go. All right. Peace, public security and order. So he gonna cause public security and order. Well, look what's going on. Look what's going on around the world, and look what happened since 9/11. People pretty much gave up their privacy, their right to privacy for security. In the name of security, they sought out peace. So you got to be careful of what powers that be that's out here trying to steal your security, and your peace shall always be in your faith. You see, so you got to be mindful of that. You can't let this world come in between you and your God and your faith in Him. and that he is your peace and your stronghold and your tower and your defense. You see, no, I'm not saying you don't have to bear arms and this, that, and the other. No. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is don't trust in this world for comfort and peace. Don't do that.
Amen.
Don't do that. Don't ever do that. What you do is that you allow your peace be in your faith. Allow your peace be in your faith.
Amen.
And with that being said, we're gonna turn this over to our brother Rob Christensen, who happened to be online. Good afternoon, brother Christensen.
Amen.
Good afternoon, brother Ernest. How are you doing?
How you doing today? Great.
I'm doing good. I've been looking forward to this.
Hey, man, this is a great topic, man. This is a great, great lesson, man. I can't wait to get into it.
Yeah,
so,
lots to be done.
So what do you mean power structure? What do that mean to us, to the unlearned ear and mind, you know, that's looking at these things? How do we view that? How should we view
okay.
it, I should say?
Yeah, well, I'll get into this later, but Edward Bernays was back in Woodrow Wilson's time, President Wilson, and he was revolutionary in his ability. I'd call him a psychological engineer. When the powers that be or the bigwigs, you know, when people were getting together, you know, they're deciding how do we run this democracy? There's the masses out there, and how do we keep control? And out of Edward Bernays came some very powerful abilities to manipulate the masses, which led to some very evil outcomes. And I'll get into that later. But I just wanted to share a little bit about the title, Power Structure at this juncture. Personally, as a truck driver of many years, in the peace of the night, like on an autumn fall night, how enjoyable it was just to stay awake and alert by making rhymes. It allowed me to be a bit more safer because it kept my mind active. So just a little personal about me. I'm into rhymes. It's my way of getting positive, creative juices flowing. It also means to cope with dire events threatening. And the word juncture, as I think many people would agree with me, we're at a critical juncture, and there needs to be more. I'm here to sound the alarm because there's things we can do. But like you say, Ernest, sometimes we get this false sense of security and we go back and watch the football game or look at our cell phone. Just a little bit more about that. So I do poetry to cope. I wrote a 15-page poem when I discovered how climate engineering is creating this weather whiplash and even threatening our planet. And as throughout the hour, maybe I'll share a few poems if time permits. But I will discuss the meaning and history of the United States power structure. And I want to point out, as Dane Wigington of geoengineeringwatch.org points out, power structure is something here in America. It's got a worldwide matrix, so to speak. But power structures are a historic thing. All throughout history, you know, especially since the agricultural revolution when we started building cities and civilizations, there's always been power structures. The Chinese government, the Russian government. So it's not exclusive to the United States, but in proportion to the size of the power structure, that's the concern, is that the bigger it gets, the more dangerous it is. And I'll verify some of that as we go. So, you know, I see very much the purpose of why I'm here is to, you know, explain how we can get out of this trap. It's the purpose in my life is to sound the alarm while creatively shedding light on the dark forces and some of the fears that keep us hiding. And it comes with what I believe to be the most dire future, regardless of human technology. Technology, according to Dane Wigington, is not saving us. It is ensuring our long-term demise. Thus, when we have things like nuclear-powered nuclear weapons, climate engineering, climate weapons, or weather warfare, it's a double-edged sword. So many of our technologies end up being weapons that destroy instead of help us. So there's a, kind of a double meaning going on all the time, and it's extremely alarming. So creation and nature on its own, if you think about it, it's so miraculous. It's so far beyond the human species to comprehend. Nature has its own technology. And so why are we at war with nature? I think that's a fundamental question we all have to ask. We're in rough times, and on this cloudy day, I'll go through some real dark things. But I want to give just a quick, fun example of something that happened the other day in my house that shows how neat and miraculous life is, how nature is. You know, I want to do my part not to contribute to this cancer that's heating up the planet. I have my own garden. I'm proud to say that I've got an apple tree out there, so I'm providing some of my own food. I don't have to go to Costco to get these perfectly beautiful apples that took a lot of energy to get in the store, or the fact that from Costco we probably get dirt cheap food from people that are starving. I think people would tend to agree with that. It's a very consumptive society we have. And anyways, my little story is that with my ugly bruised apples, they're organic, no pesticides or anything. They're sitting on the counter in the kitchen. And my wife noticed this spider web. Well, sure enough, little beknownst to us, the doggone Japanese beetles were invading my apples, laying eggs, and then egg hatched in a little cat, not a caterpillar, but something's coming out, a little worm. And it was really neat because the spider took care of all the worms. Right below the box of apples was the spider trap. So the spider was more than happy keeping our house clean. How often do we step on spiders out of fear? You know, why are we at war with nature? So this whole idea of being more natural, somehow becoming attached to our biological moorings instead of detached, is the way ahead. It's the way out of the mess we're in with overconsumption, always afraid that we're not going to have a job, trying to get more wealth and work more hours, burning up the earth. So that's part of where I'm coming from. Well, anyways, let me start getting into the power structure. There's an article by Zen Gardner, who's a blogger. I found this in the geoengineeringwatch.org website. The title is, "Who is Steering the Ship?" And this person asks, why do they do what they do? You know, this power structure, so powerful. Don't they know they're dooming themselves and the rest of us? Wars, nuclear cataclysm, climate engineering, etc. America stands for, and America with a K, you know, that's kind of a negative way to spell America. It stands for greed, corruption, violence, military aggression, social degradation, scientific insanity. We must withdraw our consent from some of this, the way things are going with all this violence and military aggression. How do we withdraw our consent? And, you know, for example, if we look back in history, biological testing has taken place in the air. Nuclear testing, how many tests? 2,000 tests just literally destroying this planet. It's amazing how, you know, things are as good as they are still when you consider all the damage that's done and the impacts that have never been considered and the tests that did we have consent to all these tests? No, we didn't. And, of course, the spraying of aerosols that I discussed. And I have to go back, but I'm a little out of order here, but this will work out. Zen says that the problem, the fabric of social, political, and economic support, it's a psychopathic-driven existence. And I can illustrate a statement by Lyndon Johnson where he says, to graduating ceremony, he who controls the weather controls the world. You think about the implication of a statement like that is, what are we out to control the weather for? The weather is what nourishes us. And without weather as it was, would we even have evolution? Weather is change, and change has enabled species from simple to complex to develop over the years. It's created the challenges and the nourishment that we need to continue this kind of divine direction of growth and self-awareness and maturity. But Zen cites this study called the Hare Psychopathy Checklist.
What was that again? The what again?
It's the Hare study of psychopathy, you know, the psychopathic behavior.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, yeah, Hare study of psychopathic study. Because I noticed you use this term, psychopathic-driven society, and now you're saying there's a Hare study concerning that?
Yeah, it's there was a study done originally about crime that, you know, obviously criminals, people that have killed people, psychopathic behavior. That 2-4% of the population, you know, if they take this checklist that was created by the scientists of the study, you know, they would score very high. And what is pointed out here is that people in positions of power also tend to score very high. They tend to gravitate toward this psychopathic behavior, like I just illustrated in President Johnson's statement. You know, somebody with that power saying, let's use technology to control the weather, which possibly means warfare, if it's something that's not in our national interest. And you know, that should raise questions. But some of the traits listed as this psychopathic behavior, I'll just list a few of them, but I think it's kind of interesting. The most important one in my mind is cunning manipulativeness. You know, highly intelligent people score high on these this psychopathic checklist. You know, it's part of the characteristic that whether you don't have to be dumb to be a criminal. Some criminals, as you know, are highly smart. They can hide secrets. Short-term marital relationships, failure to accept responsibility for their actions, impulsivity, early behavior problems, shallow affect, meaning, you know, your emotions are shallow. You don't have the empathy that many people, you know, in their everyday life have. Lack of remorse and guilt, grandiose, glib, superficial charm. They developed this with a lot of study. And I think it's really interesting how, especially the fact that we can, you know, people in power tend to gravitate or score high on the psychopathic test. So to wrap up this article, you know, these power structures are built on fearful allegiance to those who make it possible. We must withdraw. If you give attention and energy to their charade, this is Zen Gardner speaking, including the political, media, entertainment, sideshow, stop it. Fear and scarcity models, don't wait for comforting collective movement. Be your own being.
Wait a minute. So are we talking about the classic narcissist?
Yeah.
or because it sounds, it almost sounds like a classic. Now, when you start talking about someone that has the incapability of feeling remorse or self guilt or responsible for their own actions, we start getting off into narcissism and you said this study was done by who, Van who again?
Well, it's the HARE, HARE study. So one can look up that HARE, I don't know the words you could put, but HARE study on psychopathology or psychopathy.
Okay. All right, got it.
And then you'd have, some information on that.
That sounds like the classic narcissist. I was like, wow. That's almost every other person you meet.
It sure is. So, and then just defining power structure, I have the definition with me somewhere, but just a simple definition of power structure before we get too much into discussion. It's a noun around 1945, 1950, that's kind of when the concept came about. And it's simply the system of authority or influence in government, politics, education, etc. Number two, it's the people who participate in such a system. So consider academia. When, for example, climate engineering, most of academia, when we talk about problems with the weather, they'll totally ignore any, the elephant in the room, climate engineering. You have people like Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who passed away recently, formulating these policies, even articulating some of the visible secrets that they articulate. Yet they're all part of this invisible shadow kind of government that does all this damage. So, again, it's the people who participate in such a system. It's a wide breadth of society. And the U.S., as I've said, is not the only power structure. But again, the rule of thumb is the more powerful, the more destructive. We have like 10 times the military might of all combined militaries. So we're at a very critical juncture in time. Another defining aspect of power structure is, at least when I look at the United States, power structure services out of conflict. Conflict is built on it. As an empire, the criminality, the tyranny, the corruption is in direct proportion to its size. So, I'll give listeners an example. They're welcome to call in. And this is the part I kind of skipped from last session when we're talking about climate engineering. But on the advent of 9/11, the leader of this climate engineering movement, Dane Wigginton, interviewed with Richard Gage, who is involved for years now with the 9/11 controversy. And it was an amazing interview that you can catch on geoengineeringwatch.org.
If I could just chime in for a brief moment, man, that 9/11 situation has controversy all around it. From the pilots to the wallet being found in the cinders of an atomic explosion virtually. The Pentagon saying that a plane actually crashed into it with no residue of a plane or a cockpit or anything. And the plane that they said crashed into the Pentagon has a titanium engine. that would have not disintegrated. It would have been there, and it was no witnesses of it. How did that happen? Also, the other thing is that they said several trillions of dollars came up missing out of the Pentagon that day, which, you know, that's up in the air. But the thing is, what's a fact is that there was no plane on the Pentagon. There isn't a building that will fold or melt because a plane crashed into it. There's no structure in the world that would do that.
Right.
And it just didn't make any sense, you know, for anything like that to happen unless it was to instigate some sort of conflict or something. It was to instigate something. So everybody who had eyes to see was waiting on the next thing to happen because that's really what was supposed, that was really the plan to happen.
Yes.
And that was go to war.
Exactly. Yeah, Ernest, they stated by Project let's see, what's the name of it? It's called PNAC, Project for a New American Century. Some of the proponents like Henry Kissinger, Dick Cheney, Wolfowitz, I get the last name, but, you know, I'm not well studied, but, you know, they were basically saying we need a new Pearl Harbor to expedite the process of invading resource-rich countries, namely the Middle East. General Wesley Clark was saying that, you know, one of his major colleagues or generals talked to him right after 9/11, stating that we have five countries we're targeting that now this event has enabled us to go after and quickly reach our goals. So it's, again, we have a hurricane that distracts us because it's so dramatic. You know, event like 9/11 discussion, there's so many things going on, it gets lost. And like you say, there's so many aspects to 9/11. But I think perhaps from Richard Gage, who studied this for years, and he's got 3,000 architects behind him, one of the best ways to approach this and not get lost in conspiracy theory, which would help the power structure hide this event, is to look at the forensic evidence of World Trade Center Building 7. As we discussed before this event, or before our radio program, that building went down supposedly by office fires. The NIST report, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, the government agency that took a few years to compile the 9/11 report, attributed the collapse of 47 stories from office fires. So, you know, why doesn't that raise questions with people? It's, again, it's such an ugly event. It's so hard to face. And to this day, you know, it just, it goes on. And, you know, if we don't resolve these things, if we don't start getting to the truth, we're just ever deeper in a quagmire. But again, Mr. Gage was saying that building imploded on its own footprint in about 7 seconds. It went down about as fast as a bowling ball. So when I speak of Visible Secrets, that organization put up an ad, an electronic board ad, the size of a couple of stories in New York for people to see Building 7 collapsing to try to get people to, you know, wake up and say, what's going on? And really very little impact, if any. All the people in New York were kind of walking by, and it didn't make headlines. Again, that shows you the grip of the power structure, how deeply we are into this frozen denial. But what I wanted to get at, too, was okay, the visible secret is that this is on film. People have seen it collapse quickly, and yet this office fire doesn't raise enough doubt that the NIST report, even though it's full of holes and it's a scientific joke, it hasn't gotten to the point where people are really taking action to say, let's rethink this. But it's not, again, it's not that we can't. At some point, we will. I'm convinced we will start looking into it. So the invisible power that couldn't be seen in this event, and this is what makes it difficult, is it's shaped cutter technology that has been used in underwater bridges to take them down, for example. Very inaccessible, but for something this big an event, you know, they had a few years to plan it. You can vaporize metal in milliseconds with thermite technology, this space cutter technology. So the forensic evidence showed overwhelmingly vaporized metal. So we're talking 2,000 degrees, 1,800, 2,000 degrees, not 600 degrees that office fires do. And as Richard Gage mentioned, nothing in history ever by office fires or fires within a building, normal fires from materials in a building, has ever even come close to taking down a building and collapsing it like a bowling ball. So though there's many other things out there, indeed, this is the best footprint, according to Mr. Gage, that we can go with. To you know, this simple piece of information is the best way to open the door to this mess. So I'll take a little breather here. Again, I wanted to tie in too. In remind of the last session, which I forgot to do, but the visible secrets of contrails that I discussed last week. Again, if you think it's condensation trails that you see, I argue no. We're seeing aerosol trails. That's the secret. They don't want you to know. And to review, there's film evidence of the interrupted trails. You can see the spraying, and then it stops, and then they start spraying again. Another thing I didn't mention was that if the nozzles are put on a little crooked, you have an asymmetric path that they're spraying. Well, the plane won't fly if the engines are crooked.
Well, one thing, now let me ask this question here. Now, one thing now you brought up last week was that the way you could tell that these are aerosols that's being sprayed in the clouds. And when you look at it, you know, they're trying to say these are condensational, like vapors and so forth, but you're saying that this is actually a chemical, and the difference in a vapor and a chemical is that the vapor would dissipate just like if you was running and you could see the breath come out of you. That would be vapor. And just as quick as you see the breath in front of you, it don't leave a trail. It just evaporates. But
super
if
fun.
It's aerosol,
mm-hmm.
yeah, if it's aerosol or any other kind of chemical that's dense, then it would leave a trail, which is what we're getting at, is that that is not condensational, but it is actually aerosol.
Right. You need particles to form clouds. And, you know, these aerosol trails tend to spread out and form cirrus clouds, which becomes kind of a plasma. And since metallic nanoparticles are, especially aluminum is the most frequently used, based on the patents that are out, you know, the public can find these patents. That's how clouds can form. That's how you can start manipulating the weather, because they're electroconductive particles. You can have the invisible power of the radio frequency microwave technology to spread these particles out and move them, just as they can actually do now with a hurricane. Again, hurricane technology goes back 70 years with Project Cirrus, Project Storm Fury. You know, the power structure would like you to think that these are just experiments and they've never been applied. Well, if we've watched those trails all these years, that's applications. That's a big lie that, you know, that they're just experiments and maybe we should look into this to prevent global warming. The so-called solar radiation management of these aerosol trails, indeed, when you get clouds, the aluminum particles do reflect the sun, and it does have a temporary cooling. But again, the immense damage of these particles, not only do we breathe them, they get in the soil, you know, they poison the soil, they poison the air, and they can even get into our blood-brain system and those of other creatures. So, again, in review, the damage, the Alzheimer's, did this happen with our consent? No, it didn't. Again, the ability to use technology to manipulate and create falsities. And I must mention with climate engineering, too, that just like many agencies, including the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, will mask truth. They'll measure certain things, but they won't measure these microparticles. They can also create engineered toxic cool downs with this climate engineering technology. So given their ability to make it hot or cold, weather whiplash, drought and deluge, that's a massive confusion. But the overall effect that it's had over these decades is to multiply the warming effect, to really increase the ocean temperatures where more methanes are coming up into a hot ocean or a warm ocean that's way overheated, where the ocean absorbs so much of the atmospheric heat. Over 90% is absorbed by the ocean. So the ocean is a basket case right now. And that's why we're getting warmer night temperatures where methanes are coming up. So so that, again, is just to review and illustrate the invisible power, the visible, you know, evidence that we have on a daily basis, but the difficulty to sort through it all. So
can I bring you back to, I don't want to go too far back because I know we're dealing with that, but it's just a little clinking sound in my head that won't, I got to get out of it. Building seven. Okay. All right. We see the two buildings go down, the trade centers go down. Why did seven go down? And how is that, seeing that neither one of them was actually touched by a plane? And what was the excuse for it to go down?
Yeah, well, interestingly, Richard Gage said that the BBC announced long before the building went down that it went down. You know, somebody apparently had inside information. But, yeah, why did it go down? I heard one thing one time when I did my initial investigation, and I, like many, left this thing alone. I just, it's a mess. For years, I didn't look into it. But it may have had a lot of the Central Intelligence information stored in it that they didn't want people to know about. And it may well have been that it was planned to have been taken down earlier. You know, that's all conjecture. But that is a real question, is why would they take it down? Why would they, you know, create suspicion? The best answer I can give you is that there's a lot of information in that building that would have exposed the whole plan, you know, of the takedown of the towers, the explosive demolition, the inside job, so to speak, of the system.
You know, when I was listening to the reports concerning Seven, it had a lot of financial records in there too that was being wiped out. And a lot of people was being reset financially. The other thing is how did it go down?
you know, it was, you know, if they were saying that it was a bomb, you know, but that mm-hmm. don't make any sense. You know, why would they use two planes to blow up the towers, then use a bomb for this? You know, with and then say they use a plane for the Pentagon, which to this day you don't have any wreckage of a plane, any skid marks of, you know, of this jetliner going into the Pentagon. If you looked at the plane that they said that they had used to take out the Pentagon, it would have been a witness of it hitting the ground before it hit the Pentagon. Because it's that big. It's that big. It's a jumbo jet. So it was nothing left of it, no fuselage, no carriage, no wings. And, of course, like we, you know, what we talked about earlier, the two engines, which are indestructible, which is made out of titanium, they're indestructible. So the point of them being indestructible, because that will power the plane and keep it in the air. So there was no witnesses of that either. It wasn't nothing around, no parts of any type of plane, period, on a Pentagon lawn after 9/11, and you had reporters on the scene within 30 minutes, you see, of that disaster. And it wasn't something you could have cleaned up and got out of the way within that time window. That would have took weeks and months of, you know, when they do investigations of plane crashes and the black box, and then they try to put it back together and reenact everything. All of these things is evidence. Well, that's a crime scene. So why was it cleaned up so quickly? You know, that's another thing. You know, if it's a crime scene, you don't move anything. You know, so where is the plane? Right. Where is the plane? So you know, to me, that was a red flag. Now, you know, I'm not a bomb expert or anything like that on how the Twin Towers fell and so forth, but, you know, it's a building that was built on the same premise of the Twin Towers were. That was on fire in Madrid, and it burned for 20 hours and never fell. The Twin Towers fell within, 10, 15 minutes? You know, and if you look at the footage and you look at how it fell like it was implosion, you know, like a demolition implosion, you know, like when we watch stadiums being, you know, imploded and destroyed. That's how it looked like it was coming down. It didn't look like it was, you know, like fell over or anything like that. It was structured. It was a structured collapse. It was too organized.
Yeah.
You know,
my understanding of this from Richard Gage, if I can interrupt a second, the Building 7 was more of implosive devices where you had this instantaneous melting and, you know, imploding, collapsing, whereas it was a combination of this superheat, the thermite, as well as outward explosive forces. In other words, to dissipate the internal metal, how should I say, steel structures, they exploded them outward story by story, boom, 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 boom. And, you know, you could hear in the film some of that bing, boom, 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 you know, that kind of. So there's just a lot of discussion on it. But, again, getting back to the fundamental, all it takes is just one basic forensic evidence. And one fundamental question, you know, like you ask, to at least start getting to people to get their attention. We need to rethink. We need to get that law, that McIlvain law, enacted. Bobby McIlvain, I guess it was his son. I don't know if his name was Bobby as well, but was near Building 7 and was the first victim taken, you know, the first morbidity. It was an outward explosion that, you know, destroyed him. you know, some of the outward explosion from Building 7. And, you know, that, in other words, it wasn't an office fire that did it. So, you know, that's a little background to that story. And in a little break here, this intensely negative stuff, a poem I wrote of this 15-page poem, or a portion of it, is of the power structure. And it goes like this. Now it's time to expose the crime of the power structure. They're overwhelmed and out of bounds. It's time for it to rupture. A runaway train off its rails, moving faster as it fails. How can we slow it down? How can we finally stop it? It's done from town to town, on an earth not made for profit. When people rise in rage or even peace, protesting, the evidence is clear. Then the culprits start confessing, vanquish greed and fear. In other words, people on the margins, you know, they're in this career. They have good money. They can eat. Yet, you know, they're part of this destruction that's going on. And, for example, a pilot that flies for the military or even on as a private contractor that's spraying the aerosols. Well, it's compartmentalized. They're told they're doing solar radiation management, and it's non-disclosure. If they disclose what they're doing, they're going to go through hell. So at some point, all these people on the margins, the culprits, so to speak, not the big ones, but, you know, whoever, agency people, like the EPA scientist who got fired, they're going to come out in droves. So that's my poem. I could go further into it, but
hey, can I a little break. Elaborate on that poem for a little bit?
Sure.
You know, because sure. When you think of it, and when I'm hearing it, and as you refer to this train, and it's going from town to town, and it's motoring, and to me, the train sounds unstoppable. You know,
right.
It sounds like it's an unstoppable. Right. It the only way it's going to stop is that it get derailed, or it collides with an immovable object. So what is that term when an immovable object meet another immovable object? I can't think of what that term is, but what happens is when this train run into that object, it's going to be catastrophic because you got all these people that's on it and they are basically just passengers, not realizing that this train is on a collision course that's going to be monstrous, or it's, you know, cataclysmic,
right.
Whatever you want to say, you know, how we want to put this.
Exactly.
You know, when I hear the train part of it, I see an end. I see a train going through a wall. I see something that can't stop. You know, and the only way it's going to stop is that it costs, and it's going to cost a lot of lives. And
right.
I think this is a great analogy of this society or this system that we're in, you know, and that you got people that's a part of the system. They just doing their jobs, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like, you know, somebody looking at you and they saying, well, they looking at you, you the face of the company, but you're really not. You just an employee. You're not even a representative, but they looking at you as a representative or a face of that company.
Yeah.
And the truth be told, when this train crashed, you're on that same train.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I'm getting from you is that this train is not going to stop until it runs its course.
Well, okay, let me respond. here's the way I see it, and this is what I've learned from my experience. You go to Minnesota 350. I worked with them. I talked about climate engineering. They won't touch it with a 10-foot pole, even though it may be the most destructive force on our planet. I believe that. Don't trust me. I welcome anybody listening, you know, to start investigating. But you get enough spot fires, spiritual spot fires, so to speak, when people start awakening, when enough of the alarm people such as myself, I'm not holy, I ain't no saint, but, you know, I have this awareness, and I actually take pleasure in sharing this information because I start feeling, well, at least I'm doing something. And, you know, it's for the greater good. What more? It's not my own myopic little world where I can watch a football game and just forget about the future. You know, I'm doing something for my kids. I don't want them to live in 120-degree temperatures. So, you know, I have this poetic rally cry that my dream is to see thousands of people starting to march on the streets. That's what's going to stop the train, because when you get the groups and the visibility and you go viral on the internet and so forth and wake people up and they start joining and the momentum starts, you've got a human wall that can really make a quantum leap of change. You know, my rally cry,
you know,
is women of the web. Oh, go ahead.
You know, I got to say, Rob, you know, if this was Europe, I would say you got a really good point. This isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people in Europe, they throw firebombs and everything. Here, the actual police or task force shoot at the citizen and perform officers. They do really violent things to their own people. So to get people out there to actually protest and move like that, it's going to take a lot. And right now, people don't have the faith, man, that the environment is in that much trouble, you know, or they can't see that the environment is in that much trouble.
A big part of that is the ability to manipulate weather and make these cool downs like they did in April. That keeps people comfortable. It masks. Many agencies of government have the capability of masking the problem. But yet my daughter is breathing smoke from out west. Californians are in this drought-stricken, hot climate, and forest fires have exponentially increased. There's not enough people right now that have awoken to this. But the biosphere collapse, the rate of extinction is unprecedented. You know, with the ocean critters and, you know, the insects are way down.
Do you really believe that our environment could reach 30 degrees here in Minnesota? I mean, seriously, do you believe that it would get that hot here?
It will if within the next 8 years. There is an article that says within the next 8 years, we could be extinct. I mean, the extinction process, the runaway climate could be so fast. Because, again, to illustrate, Dane Wigington said this in a very simple way. The Arctic, with all its ice holding back the methane, you know, it's frozen in the methane, yet methane historically has always bubbled up. It even comes out in flame. If you look up methane craters, you'll see these. It looks like the moon, you know. And I've seen the huge flames come out of the ocean from the methane. But Dane's point is this. You take a glass of water that has ice in it, and that water is going to stay cool as long as the ice is still there. Even though it's melting, that water temperature stays relatively cool. But the moment that ice cube is completely melted, like the North Pole, which is very close, which could happen within the year, then you have a much quicker accelerating heat. So there are some scientists now from the Arctic and who are experts on the climate. Some of the foremost international experts are indicating that, you know, we have to act very rapidly, collectively, to stop this process, you know, this overheating process. And it's a scary thing, and it's very unpleasant, but, you know, never for a second am I going to give up. There's a climate scientist, his last name is McPherson, who's part of this panel that predicts 2026 as the critical year. And, you know, he is of the give-up mindset. He said there's nothing we can do. We're already lost. And I do agree that the future, that the biosphere, regardless of technological fixes, it ain't going to get fixed very fast. It's going to take a long, long time to have the thriving planet that we did have 30, 40 years ago.
So we're talking within 10 years that we can start experiencing the beginning of the end? Are we saying like 2028?
Yeah, 2026 actually was the article, and I wish I could find it flew around somewhere on my desk, but I wasn't even going to bring it into this conversation, but I can in the future.
Do that. Do that.
I will.
Yeah, please. Definitely like to introduce that. We got a prophetic calendar that we use, and it put us around the year 1998. You know, if you look at the calendar that we have with Pope Gregory put together, which is a 365. And then you put together the biblical calendar, which is 360, and you take both of them and you multiply them by 2,000. Well, it's going to be a 10,000 day difference between the 365 and the 360. So what do you do? You divide the 360, you divide the 10,000 by 360, because you got the that's the actual days that the 365 calendar is over. So you take the actual days and you divide that by 360, and you will come up with 27.77777. Give you 27.27777 point, or 27 years and 7 months. Other words, bro, that calendar that you're talking about, if you look at it, you subtract what you do. You take that 27, you subtract it from the year 2000 that just passed, and that will put you in around about the year that you would be in. Well, if you take away, could you do that for me, Ray, right quick? Subtract 27 from 2000. Okay, now I'm gonna show you how you work this out, because this is what now by you saying this 2026 deal, that will put us around if I'm looking at this correctly, this will start putting us around the seals being broken. 27 subtracted by 2,000 is what? Okay, 27 subtracted from 2,000 is 1,073. Okay, so this is what you do. So you take, that's kind of low. It would be a little higher, wouldn't it?
1,000 minus 27.
Yeah. That's 1973? Okay, so, all right. So what you do, you say, okay, 1973. So now what you do is now you take that same, you take that 27 and subtract it from 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you have? This would be the real year that we will actually be in will be 1991 instead of the year 2018. So you're saying within 10 years will put us in the year 2027, which will put us at the year 2000 biblically, which would be the end of a millennium, which will be taking us into the seventh day prophetically. So,
okay,
it's actually adding, you know, it's actually adding up. That's why I would like for you to bring that to the table.
Okay, I'll find it. I've been looking frantically, but it's something to the title, will extinction occur in 2026? And these scientists just statistically say yes, unless we change course.
Yeah, this is a serious thing, man, because this is where we at now. You look at everything going on right now, and, you know, prophecy is going down the middle of the street. We can't deny it. The armies are getting geared up, and the money system is where it's supposed to be. The dollar is turning into nothing. Everything is going digital. Gold and silver is almost completely eradicated. Those things are among our treasures, our national treasures. So everybody is on a debt system. Nobody actually have money. Everybody is on a debt system. So we are right where we are in the days of Egypt, that everybody in the days of Joseph, when they gave all their gold up and then sold themselves as slaves to the system. And this is what's going to happen.
No.
Men and women are going to sell themselves to the system in order to eat. You see, so we're at that point.
Interesting.
You know, we're at that mindset. The mindset is already here. The actual putting it forward isn't yet. People, you know, we thinking it's some kind of hocus pocus or some kind of hoax or some, you know, far out story, whatever. It's not. It's actually prophetic, and it's moving right along in the street right now. So I'm not saying that it's the year 1991, but I got to say, we got to be in the ballpark, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We got to be in the ballpark, and because the seal said what it said in Revelations, I think it is, in Revelations chapter 8. Revelations chapter 8, he talks about, what was that? Yeah, Revelations chapter 8 and verses 8 and 9. And he talks about how he calls the earth to heat up, you know, and man is going to blaspheme God because of the sun. He going to turn the sun 7 times hotter, you know, than it is now.
Yeah.
Well, how is that going to take place? Well, all of this is prophetic. The ball is already rolling.
It sure
you see,
is.
So we already
here. Methane, right. Methane is 100 times more heat trapping than carbon dioxide, you know, over the short term. But when it first comes out, it traps heat unbelievably so. So it's like greenhouse gas. The more, you know, there has been a major methane extinction where scientists say 90% of all creatures were became extinct. Very little survived. But again, it wasn't a drying climate. Climate engineering does so much drying where, you know, the volcanoes that cause this methane release, rain was the way to wash it out. And now with the desiccants that we spray, not only from planes and climate engineering, but from, you know, all the combustion, all the smoke we put out, you know, has the drying effect.
You know, I have
anyway.
That verse. It says this. It's Revelations chapter 8. And it says this in 8 and 10. It said, "The third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as a lamp. And it fell upon a third part of the rivers and upon a..." Wait a minute. No. Wait a minute. Yeah, there it is. Revelation 8 and 7. It says, first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood. And it was cast upon the earth, and a third part of the trees was burnt up, and all the grass was burnt up. Now, this is when that trumpet is blown, but when you go into Revelation 16, it gets a little bit more detailed. He says,
I see.
Let's see, yeah. Revelation 16 and 17, it says, the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the earth, upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch man with fire. And man was scorched with great heat and blasphemed the name of God, which have power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. So he's going to do that. He's going to allow the earth to heat up, you know.
Yeah.
But he also said he's going to have to come before man completely eradicate mankind, because we're at that time window. But
right.
And we're pushed over the clock. But I just want these things is just start coming. You know, we got to look at that. What we're looking at is man. These things that you're talking about, you know, that's happening right now before our eyes is prophetic and an underlying current to the Word of God, which is testifying that these things are going to take place. And he's showing us how they're taking place, you see.
Okay,
And he's giving you the insight on how these things are happening, but it's all from him. Because he got to do what he got to do. But that's why I was listening at that poem that you put up. This is a train, but it's a train that it got to run its course. You said it out your mouth. It got to run its course.
Yeah, it's got to run its course.
And that's the thing. It got to run its course. So. The only thing what we can do is actually just sound an alarm that this train is out of control.
Right.
And people on the train thinking that it's actually.
Yeah, I was just going to quickly point out the Hopi prophecy in their creation story and their ending story. You know, they say it's we are who we are waiting for. So just how bad this purgatory becomes, it'll be pretty much up to all individuals that, you know, don't rely just on some groups like Minnesota 350 to do it. They're funded by Rockefeller. They're not going to touch it. It's going to be spiritual spot fires of people like you and I and others out there that, you know, will get through this. But you've got to sound the alarm and you've got to wake people up to do it.
Amen. I had Googled that immovable object meaning immovable object. It's called an irresistible force paradox. When an unstoppable force meets an immovable object, and it's called a force paradox, man, and it's cataclysmic, man. It's atomic.
Sure.
You know, I'm not saying it's nuclear. It's atomic because the force is all atom. You know, by nature, it's all atom by nature. So it's atomic. You know, anyway, we got to get back into that, and we definitely got to get more into this. One is I really like to get further into the 9/11, because, you know, that's on people's heads, man. What really happened on 9/11? I wish we would have dealt with this before 9/11 came around.
Right.
You know, because that's, you know.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, that's, you know, you got a lot of people that's talking about it. And, you know, people now, it didn't die down. Some people want it to die down because they don't want to really see the truth of it. But
exactly.
Started to see the truth of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is that this was a man-made event. And you was right. It was about gains. Of resources, of another nation's resources, and when what I saw was oil fields on fire, you know, and that told me right then and there when they start burning up their own oil fields, I said, oh, that's the message to the world that this is what this is about. You know,
wow,
about
interesting.
The gaining.
Yeah, how true.
Yeah, gaining the oil fields. You know.
Yeah.
So
true.
When we got there, we actually went there to put out the fires of the oil fields. And then, next thing you know, we turned around and brought in our trucks and started hauling that oil out.
Yep.
We still got trucks
exactly.
over there moving that oil. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
We still got
yep.
trucks moving that oil out of there. So that's just, you know, it's just a part of the whole thing. But to use innocent lives to collapse a building like that with people in it, you know, as a shock theory, that was over the top, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you do it in the evening when there wasn't nobody there and was locked, you know?
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would you do it when
it
could be children?
That's amazing. I knew this topic would go on more than a session, so that's good. I kind of predicted that. So, you know, the moving from the shadows, I didn't get into that. So I really look forward, you know, to our next conversation. I did find the title, Human Extinction by 2026, Robert Burrows. It was on Presenza.com. I can text it to you.
Okay.
Too.
Okay, good. Yeah, do that, please. And Robert, thank you for hanging out with us. We want to say, great lesson, great theses, and we can't help. We can't wait for the next one. Everyone, you've been listening to Visible Secrets and Invisible Powers. Visible Secrets and Invisible Powers with Rob Christensen. Wow. Thank you for the insight. Thank you for the alarm. Thank you for staying there.
Thank you for the great question.
Listening. Yeah, and stay in there. Keep sounding the alarm. Wake up the people. We're here.
We do.
So with that being said, everyone, I want to thank everybody for their time. We hope we edify someone. And you got any questions, please leave a message on the Blog Talk board or call the number. We do have a number, which let me pull that up right quick. I got it. It's right here. And it is... Nope, that's not it. That's the other one. it's 888-222-2148. That's 888-222-2148. If you have any questions, if you got any questions concerning any other topics that you hear on the Sounds of Living Water Blog Talk Radio Show, please leave a message there. You have any questions for Rob Christensen concerning the thesis you heard today? Please feel free. You got any questions concerning Invisible Secrets and Invisible Powers? Call that number and leave questions, and we will pass them on to Rob, and Rob will answer your questions the next time we air, which will be in 2 weeks. So thank you again. Rob, thank you again, and everyone, we want to say thank you again for taking the time for listening to Sounds of Living Waters. I'm Job Israel, the Commonwealth for Israel, and we want to bid everybody good afternoon.
All right.
Shalom.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water, Sounds of the Living Water, Sounds of the Living Water, Radio Show.
We teach the
Preach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love, it covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show.